Did you know that Virginia is the birthplace of American whiskey? Well, they've been making it there since 1607, and Catoctin Creek has been honoring that tradition of small craft rye whiskey since 2009. Virginia grain, Virginia water, and Virginia barrels. Catoctin Creek, the Virginia rye whiskey. This is brought to you by Smooth Ambler, a proud member of the Bourbon Pursuit family. Smooth Ambler builds on the traditional roots of American whiskey through innovative blends, proudly sourced whiskeys, and a unique line of their own homemade bourbon and rye recipes made in West Virginia. So venture off the traditional trail and go see them in Maxwellton, West Virginia. They'd love to welcome you to the family that they're building around their whiskey. Wilderness Trail is sweet mash Kentucky straight bourbon and rye whiskey made by master distiller Shane Baker and fermentation expert Dr. Pat Heist. Whether it is high rye or wheated, cask strength or bottled and bond, Wilderness Trail is always non-chill filtered premium whiskey with unparalleled flavor. Distilled, aged, and bottled in Danville, Kentucky.
It's like our emails. I mean, every day we get one that's like, oh, guess what? This one's coming out and it is 9.5 years old. And it's been sitting in this corner of this warehouse getting the north sun, and it will yield about 25,000 bottles.
How's it going, everybody? It's episode 314 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman, and before we start today's episode, talking about the most annoying trends when it comes to bourbon releases, here's your weekly bourbon news update. It's another reminder that you need to get signed up for the world's top whiskey taster competition coming from Bardstown Bourbon Company. You will compete for a chance to win a scholarship to Moonshine University, the opportunity to create your own blend with Steve Nally, get sponsored with a block party in your hometown, and a $20,000 cash prize. Sign up now for the casting call at worldstopwhiskeytaster.com to showcase your knowledge and your enthusiastic personality. Big news on the Pursuit United side of things. We began bottling last week and will be finishing up this week. That means we're about 2 to 4 weeks away from Pursuit United making its return to store shelves. If you don't know the story behind Pursuit United, go and check out episode 310. But United got a double platinum at the Ascot Awards and finished runner-up as the best blended bourbon in the entire competition, making it one of the top five spirits awarded at the event. So get ready to buy a bottle and maybe a backup. You'll be able to find it on sealbox.com and on store shelves in Colorado, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Texas. Now moving on to bourbon release news. The 2021 release of Old Forester Birthday Bourbon will be from 12-year-old barrels and presented at 104 proof. This batch is comprised of 119 barrels that were filled on April 16th of 2009 and they matured in Warehouse G. Old Forester Birthday Bourbon will be available starting September 2nd at the retail shop at Old Forester Distilling Company and nationwide for a suggested price of $130. Blue Run Spirits unveils a new summer release, which is a 14-year-old small batch bourbon that will be 113 proof and available for retail for $200. Additionally, Blue Run will be distilling and laying down new fill at Bardstown Bourbon Company this year, with Jim Rutledge serving as the distiller for these specific products, as he did for last year's distillation that happened at Castle & Key Distillery. $1,000 bottles, store price gouging, and bots taking your bottles. These are some of the most annoying trends that we see today in bourbon releases. So the team gets together and we analyze what we're seeing in the current environment, and we get to air some grievances. But we always try to find a silver lining, and we try to see some positive trends that come out of this as well. Barrel Craft Spirits is always setting the bar for some of the best blends on the market, using stocks and barrels from around the world. And now you can get your hands on some right now without leaving your house. Go to barrelbourbon.com and click the Buy Now button. With that, enjoy today's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Q on the North Side, who on the Twitter handle, @MattCusick, writes me in 2019. Yeah. I know I'm behind on my reviews of my Above the Char submissions. Actually, I just had so many in 2019 that Matt's really good one got lost in the paper, the big giant mounts of paper that I have, or email or Twitter, whatever. Anyway, so Matt asked the questions, what do I do with my limited edition bottles after I open them up? And here's the thing. This is, I have a network of friends, and I have a very thirsty wife who drinks a lot of bourbon, probably because she's married to me, and, you know, it could be a coping mechanism. I don't know. But at the end of the day, a limited edition bourbon, you know, 50 years ago was just bourbon. You know, it was just something that you found in the store. You know, marketing has turned it into an adventure, a hunt, if you will, of limited edition bottles. And I'm very fortunate that brands send me things. But you know what? I hunt bottles too. I buy bottles all the time. I spend way too much money on bourbon. And I don't spend money on bourbon to sit in my basement and collect dust. I spend money on bourbon so I can crack it open with my really good friends, smoke a cigar with them, and talk about whatever's going on in our lives. And to be honest with you, the past year with COVID, I ended up having a lot more whiskey because I didn't have my friends to go to and drink it with. So it was a time of that made me realize how much my friends mean to me and how much bourbon means to me. But always, my bottles are shared. The only bottles that are not shared are collecting dust in my basement for very special occasions, or some kind of tasting that I have planned in the future that has to do with history. So everything that I have, I'd say 75-90% of it is opened and shared with friends and family and actually strangers. Every now and then, I bring a stranger into my office and we toast to the town. Then they come back the next week and want to do it again. I'm like, no. That's not how this works. You know, it's like a stray dog sometimes. I feed them and they keep coming back, and that's okay. But at any rate, that's going to do it for this week's Above the Char. If you want to be read on Above the Char, be like Matt and submit me your idea on Twitter. That's at Fred Minnick, FradMinnick. If you're lucky, I'll read it in 2 years, just like I did Matt's. But that's going to do it for this week, folks. Be safe out there. And remember, vodka sucks. Cheers, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. The boys here today talking about something, as every year when it comes into release season, there becomes a time when the news starts getting a little bit more interesting. People start getting a little bit more chaotic. The lines start forming. People start hitting up their local liquor store. And it just seems that the bourbon world goes into a tailspin of, well, A, you wanted to get it. B, there's FOMO. And then C, there's this whole realm of, if you do get it, what do you do with it? So we kind of want to talk today about some of the most annoying things that we see in the realm of bourbon releases. And
gosh, so, where do we start?
I know,
right? There's so many.
I mean, there's everything from like, so we'll say the first way that you get any kind of inkling of how this happens is through the press release.
Gosh, it seems like everything deserves a press release these days. You know, it's like, gosh, I can't even think of an example, but it's like our emails. I mean, every day we get one that's like, oh, guess what? This one's coming out and it is 9.5 years old and it's been sitting in this corner of this warehouse getting the north sun, and it will yield about 25,000 bottles. Well, one of our limited releases to date.
But, you know, that kind of stuff, those kind of details in a press release, man, that's meat, right? What's not meat is like the words like hand-picked, Johnny Master Distiller.
Special crafted.
You know, there's so much, and it has never changed. Like, it's always been this way. There's so much fluff in a press release. And, you know, the audience may not always get to see these, but there are websites that just copy and paste the press release, and they get good views because bourbon and the bourbon brands are one of the strongest keywords in SEO world, you know? So like, you know, at Forbes, we get like instructed on how to write headlines and everything. And it all feeds into the clickbait stuff. And those press releases are filled with clickbait happy keywords. And that, you know, from the trade perspective and where we sit, that stuff's annoying to me. It really is. I've been so tired of that. And that hasn't changed ever.
It's like pop radio. It's like they know how to make a hit and they're just going to keep, you know, beating it till it stops producing a hit, you know?
And it's always fascinating to see what resonates with consumers. Like to me, like, Wilderness Trail doesn't put out really anything, doesn't put out a press release, and it's really well known in the whiskey geek circles. But I can't get Johnny Stand in Line for Blanton's to give Wilderness Trail a shot, you know, when I'm doing like tastings. It's strange what will resonate with the people who, you know, are loosely into bourbon and just kind of hunt bottles.
That's very true. I mean, when you think about, I love the clickbait thing that you said. It's like, well, if you didn't get your hands in Emmer T. Lee this year, you should get this year's. That's now 110 proof. It's like, wait a minute. Like, there's no way that I can even try that.
Yeah.
So that is true. That is one of the things that, and don't get me wrong, you do have to get eyes and visibility on whatever kind of platform that you're on, and you have to kind of get those people into it. But at the same time, you are right. There are those people that just copy and paste the press release in there, and it's good. It gets SEO. It helps build your website up, and there's really nothing else you have to do. Like, it's literally copy-paste. But
yeah, and it's like you go to every single bourbon outlet, and it's the same exact article. Or you're like, well, maybe this one says something new. And you're like, nope, same copy and paste.
Or then they might have changed. Like, I mean, don't be wrong. I'm sure we all plagiarize something at some point in our life. And you're like, well, I'll change a sentence here to restructure it, make it a little bit different.
Well, when it's a press release, it's for immediate release and it's for public consumption. So it's technically not plagiarism. And if you just kind of, you know, what I do is I take out the fluff. So it's this price, it's that proof, it's this mash bill, it was in that warehouse, whatever kind of real details. But the going along with what's annoying in these press releases, distiller quotes. Distiller quotes are the most useless things
they are.
The entire world.
I didn't even think about
on this
that.
Batch. We
little, you know, clove, little cinnamon, like, okay, like, come on.
They like just randomly pick stuff off the bourbon wheel. They're like, oh yeah, we'll throw these in there for this release. You know, they'll buy it.
And this is where you kind of like know that
I have to be careful here because we've done our own press release.
That's true. You all
have. So that,
but you know, to be fair, all we did is look at it and be like, oh well, that's seems like a format that works. Like, let's go right ahead and just copy.
I mean, and with the amount of press that you two have been getting, you ain't wrong.
We essentially just copied whatever distillery. We're like, what do they do right? And we're just going to do it ourselves. But no.
So when I look, when we kind of have this discussion on press releases, and I know that's just a portion of it, you know, I want to know what they think is bad. And that is where like Buffalo Trace, you know, we always give them a lot of business, you know, for building up the hype. You know, they've done a really good job of letting us know when they have shortages. But they also let us know when they didn't like something, when experiments didn't go well. Like, if you remember their single oak project or their experimental series, you know, Harlan Wheatley would get in there and he's like, yeah, this sucked and that sucked, but I like this one okay. You know, and so like, I respect that. I respect when a distiller goes out on the limb and says, you know what, this one wasn't ready. We didn't like it. And Michter's does this too. Michter's will say like, this barrel wasn't ready at 10 years old. It's good at 20. But it wasn't ready at 10.
Let's just have it sit for another decade and see what happens.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that.
But you are right. I mean, there's some things that come in those quotes that are, they're always the same. It's either we're very proud, we love to experiment. All these
innovation at XYZ Distillery.
Exactly. The innovation.
First class and
innovation. Oh my God, that word is so overused.
It really
putting
is.
It in another barrel is not innovation. That's putting it in another barrel.
Another barrel and another bottle. I think that's the other thing to kind of look at with this. I mean, everything that is going to come out that is a new release, it's got to come in a new bottle, new shape, new label, new story behind it. Because as we've seen with You know, with Heaven Hill, when they got rid of the white label and had to go and rebrand it. I mean, everything has to go and look different to have a different consumer feel to it.
And I'm looking at one of your bottles on the shelf right now, the Woodford Derby bottle. You know, beautiful bottle. You got a painting right next to it. And, you know, that kind of packaging that has a special artist story to it, I love that. I don't necessarily want to see the cost of that artist to be reflected in the bottle. But when the creation of the bottle actually adds something to the story, that's fantastic. Unfortunately, for some of them, that's the only story they got. You know, because the whiskey just sucks, and it always comes down to that, right? Like the packaging is like, ooh, that's so pretty, but you get in there and it's like, oh man, that's 2-year-old craft whiskey that they should have never bottled.
So I want to pick your brain on that. So. Like, for example, you said the Woodford or like Makers, you know, it's in that they do the different waxes for different
right.
college teams or whatever.
But like,
the whiskey doesn't change.
Right.
Would you rather see them try to put something unique in those versus just, you know, having a different wax or different label?
Absolutely. But I also think those types of bottles, and especially the Derby bottle, they are not meant for us. They are not meant for the whiskey follower. They're meant for the Derby fan. And it's a special bottle to the Derby fan. And that I remember, so I have a real good friend, Paul Blackburn. His grandpappy died, and he collected every single Maker's Mark bottle. And when the year after he passed, he's like, I have to add to my grandpa's collection. And like he had never opened any of these bottles, and he just kind of kept going out getting these special Maker's Mark bottles. And he's like, Ferret, I think it was a special Keeneland bottle. He's like, I couldn't get it. I need your help getting it. So I helped him. He's able to get it. And it was like, that's the kind of thing that those special bottlings for Makers and Woodford do. And we're seeing it now. You know, there's a lot of other brands that are doing these special bottlings. Like we're seeing Evan Williams do it for like veterans. We're seeing Buffalo Trace do it as well for, you know, for some like charity causes. And, you know, when... I would like to see the whiskey to be reflective of the bottle and to be special, but at the end of the day, you know, those packaging strategies like that are very different. I'm thinking more along the lines of like the Bob Dylan one, you know,
with the Heaven's Door stuff?
Heaven's Door.
Heaven's Door, yeah.
You know, that was designed by Bob Dylan. Incredible packaging. You know, you look at it and then you see the price point. I think the price point's north of 90, depending on what the bottle is. But then you taste it and you're like, you know what? That whiskey does not match the bottle. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, that irritates me when your press release is all about, or your marketing strategy is all about the packaging, but your whiskey does not match the bottle. And I hate to bring this one up because we talk about it all the time and we bitch about it constantly. And that's Blanton's. Blanton's is, you know, I could argue that is the best package in all of bourbon.
I don't think anybody's going to argue against it.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly is. Beautiful package. And it gets people in the door for bourbon a lot of times. And I think it's great if you can get it for that price point. But that whiskey, to me, does not warrant the price gouged SRP, the price gouged retail prices that we're seeing out there, like $200.
In the hysteria.
In the hysteria behind it. It just does not warrant it. But that package is dadgum beautiful. And I think there should be better whiskey in it.
So upgrade to the gold or the straight from the
barrel. That's the truth. That's the truth.
You can do that. That's for sure. Now, the other thing about the packaging, I do like it when you change things up and you do make it unique for the different whiskeys that do come out. I did think you made a really good point about how you do it differently for charities. I mean, I think like Keeneland, when they do that every single year, I think there's something that goes to charity every single year for it. Same thing with Evan Williams. That'll, you know, goes to veterans, goes to charity. So there is something that they can do that is a slight change, nothing that requires a whole team to go out and find new barrels, but instead you just call the person who makes your glass or your labels and you say like, hey, can we do this? And now you have something that goes back into a good charity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you're going to, I love helping. Anything that we can do for charities is especially in bourbon is so important. You know, I think some of the issues that we find with the, you know, packaging change, like there are companies that will consistently change their packaging and that's a new press release or a new marketing initiative every 5 years. I don't think, you know, Wild Turkey, By my estimation, I think they have changed.
They're coming out with a new 101 like every other year.
Every other, I mean, it's, yeah. When it's not 101, it's Russell's Reserve or it's Kentucky Spirit, whether it's here or not. When that is the lead, when you're constantly doing that and it's built in as a strategy, I just think that's a false play. I don't think it's a good move. And I think you can hurt your brand when you're constantly doing that. I do like what Baker's did, what Beam did with Baker's. You know, they had the same package for 20, 30 years, and then they, came out with that
they
new
modernized
product.
They modernized it,
and they added to it.
Yeah.
So when you're creating a new package, you should almost add to that portfolio of that particular brand. And look, there's all kinds of strategies that go behind this, but the package is
like Booker's, they would never change that packaging.
I think Booker's would come from the grave and destroy the marketers.
But they had to do some because it wasn't, I mean, Baker's was great. We did the Baker's blind tasting. I think we all liked the newer 13 one, year, but yeah, the older one was like not too far behind it.
Yeah.
But, it did take some revamping the packaging to kind of get it out there again to where people would try it again, but I'm not sure it. Maybe it did. Maybe it turned some heads. So it's like, oh, yes, we are now Baker's fans, where originally we weren't. But maybe they are.
we weren't Baker's fans until they came out with a stopper or a topper that was about a pound and a half.
That, I mean, that's the old saying of like, I taste what you're telling me to taste. It's very much about the bottle. Like if you take, Pappy Van Winkle, I am convinced that when people drink Pappy Van Winkle at the bar and they're looking at that bottle, that they their brain is communicating to their palate how special it is versus the palate going to the brain. Now, I like Pappy, especially the 15-year-old, but I do think that when you look at that bottle while you're tasting it, and if you are new to the game, that you the brain will kind of overtake your palate. Now, if you spent a lot of money on it and all you can think about is the money on it, then you're like,
yeah,
this
I said the,
sucks.
The reverse happens too.
The reverse happens.
I know with us, like, I remember like the Tornado bottle, the first time I had it, I was like totally underwhelmed. I was like, gosh, I spent all this money to try it, $50 a pour. Mm-hmm. But then like somebody sent them to it's a blind taste test and it like smoked everything in the blind taste test. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought this sucked because I had that preconceived notion like this is going to be special. I spent all this money. It better live up to the hype.
This doesn't taste like $2,000.
Yeah, right. Back toward I may be going off topic here.
But it is a real thing. And if you were listening to music that you love, it can influence what you are tasting. That is a real thing. And the influences will go into your taste buds. Now, one of the greatest tasting experiences of my life happened in France in the cellar of a cognac house. And, Alexandre pulled from a demijohn what he said was distilled during Napoleon's time. And we tasted what was a, 40, 50-year-old cognac that was distilled during Napoleon's reign. He's telling me all this, and I put it upon my lips, and I'm in this cellar. I mean, it was like, the thing was making love to me, and it was all my body.
All your sensors.
I was all tickling up. It was, woo. I mean, how much of that was influenced by him telling me that, by me being there? How would I have experienced that cognac if I was tasting it in a bland room with no sound, nobody influencing me? So your experience, the setting, all of that will influence it. And they try to bring that influence to every little bit of marketing message. And you see that it works. Websites like Uproxx and VinePair, they will take that messaging and have it be fed through like a bartender's quote and say like five best bourbons for the money according to bartenders. And it's basically everything that we all know. And it's just that little, they will pull that influence in through kind of clickbaity stuff. And it just keeps getting pushed out there. And I think when we talk about what is really annoying, that kind of stuff is, it gets old after a while, but man, does it work.
Yep.
I clicked on two today. I mean, that's just how it works.
Oh, yeah. Give me I'm a sucker for top tens or top fives.
Listicles.
It's like, I don't want to research. Just give me a top five.
They do work. So after the bottle comes out,
We learn about it. Get annoyed about it.
We see the master distiller quote about it. Now it actually finally hits the store. Now we can all probably agree that the most annoying thing is stores that gouge and they price gouge and they put it way above SRP because, oh, this is the three-tier system. You know, I have to pay this and I have to get this, get these bottles, whatever.
Yeah, their defense of it is getting gross.
At this point, I'm kind of
were like, you know, they'll get on social media and like attack people for shopping at Total Wine saying you should come to our store and pay 40% more or something.
It totally makes sense. Like the distillery should make the least amount of margin and you should make the most.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, the people that create and make this get the least amount. So give me a break.
Yeah. That part of the game right now is really ugly. And I hope it does improve. But keep going.
Well, I mean, the other thing is to think, I also want to say that there's never been something that's coming out and saying like, this is the most fair way to distribute any allocated releases whatsoever. It's different ways to do it across the board, no matter where it is. And no matter what, somebody's going to get pissed off and annoyed and somebody's going to be happy in every situation, right? So when we think about stores, like what are some of those annoying things that we see? I mean, one thing I'll throw up is, you know, you only get bottles based on allocation of points. You know, how much have you spent that year and you get points, which, don't be wrong, it sounds good in theory, but there are ways to get around this and really kind of make it work for your favor. Mm-hmm. Because I have friends that are in, you know, outside of the markets of Kentucky because it's technically not legal here. But when you get into places like, you know, in Texas and one of the big chains around there, there are people that are called party planners. And what do? They go buy a ton of liquor every single week for parties. And so they are the ones that have tens of thousands of points to actually be kind of the first in line, even though they could probably give a shit about the whiskey.
Oh, you're talking about consumers doing the purchasing to get bottles.
Well, yeah, consumers do it. But see, that's the thing. Most consumers are at an unfair advantage. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, regular Jane and John, they're not going to go and they're not spending $10,000 every single week to be able to go and be at the top of this list, right? So there is an unfair advantage to some of these systems too.
Yeah, I mean,
that one's tough because it's like you do want to reward your loyal customers, but there are going to be people, like you said, that, you know, they take advantage because they are a party planner or they have an office where they can say like, oh, I can just deduct all these and, you know, this is for my business. And then so it's like, I mean, to me, the most annoying is you're the first to know, you know, and you're on an email chain with tens of thousands of people. And it's like, no, I'm not. And then you got to go wait in line. And that's where I don't like. So I think the points are like reward your loyal customers is the way that's at least annoying to me. And the most annoying is you're the first to know to where anyone and everyone can come and no matter who, what, where as long as you get there first, you know, cause you don't have anything else to do that day, you can get the bottles.
But that day,
everyone else
that day, you mean the previous night,
right? The previous night. Yeah.
So Ryan, like we're all in business. You have very in demand seasons.
Sure.
Like, in the go green. Let's say you are slammed, absolutely slammed, and you've got to make a decision about what houses to visit. How do you make the decision? You're going to have to tell some people they're not going to get their lawns treated. How do you make that decision?
Sure. I mean, I deal with this every fall because seeding season is like a very tight window. I'm sure people love to hear about this. But, there's a very tight window where we can only seed so many yards in a certain amount of time. And so what I do is I allocate those 6 weeks to my existing customers that already have treatment plans with us, that are already purchasing from us. And everyone else, I do turn them down. I say, hey, we're full. We'll try to get to you next year. Sorry. That's just the way we do it. And then there is the case where we don't have enough time for existing customers to seed their yards because they waited to, you know, too long to the last minute or whatever and whatnot. So it is tough because you do have to tell them no. And so it's kind of different because mine's like so time sensitive, but maybe not. But I do try to reward those that are already doing business with me.
So the lesson here is once you're on the list, don't get off the list.
Don't get off the list. Yeah, right. Yeah, sign up early on the list. If you need seed, call me in April for fall.
Yeah. That, or if you're already being rewarded at your local liquor store, don't stop going there. Like, keep purchasing, keep going.
And I think that goes a long way with, you know, smaller stores. And obviously, the bigger stores have point systems, not here in Kentucky.
It is a scale thing, right?
Right.
It's hard to determine. Because if it's a smaller store and you've got one store and you've got, you know, your, we'll say, not even a handful. I remember the days of my local store coming around here, and I was one of a handful of people that used to go. And now I am one of probably 150 that I had to, has to deal with, you know, the bourbon nerd trying to get something. And I kind of gave up a little bit, and that's fine because we've got enough bourbon to last us a lifetime for all of us. So this is just one of those things that I look at as saying, like, okay, well, now we'll have a little bit of the changing of the guard, and we'll let somebody else kind of take that spot or fight for it, because I'm not going to deal with the crowd at Rush.
Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that is the most annoying thing about limited releases is people camping and going out early. And I know that a lot of people have fun, they create relationships, you know, but it's just,
I think that part of it can be cool, you know, if we're in that, because I've done that, you know, I've been in the long lines, I've waited out for a long time, and it is fun, you know, you do make friendships.
Yeah, I guess I should take it back. It was fun at the beginning because you're so excited about this new hobby and you're meeting new people, you're trying to find out what people like, what you're trying to get into. And so I guess I shouldn't totally discount and say it's totally annoying, I guess, but you get burnt out on it quickly.
I mean,
after like two or three, and you're like, well, shit, I did this three times, I got nothing. So
I mean, really, there is a real issue of bourbon burnout, and there's a lot of I think there is we can get sour real quickly in this profession, but in this hobby, you know, because you want something, you can't get it, someone else got it, you know, I hate that guy because he said this about that bourbon, now I can't get it. You know, there's all kinds of stuff like that.
That guy being you?
Yeah, it's happened a time or two.
Poked himself, yeah.
It's a therapy session for you?
But it's, you know, it is a, when I have written about this, you know, basically the term of being a bourbon geek, there's a pattern. You know, we get excited, we learn, we fall in more love, we make friends. Something goes wrong. We listen to the wrong person. Something happens. Suddenly we can't get something. We hate everybody. And then you try to go to another spirit. And then you come back because you realize no other spirit really does it for you. Like
this is
bourbon.
Sounds just like my story. Like 5-6 years ago.
So it is the, it is the,
you just gotta start a bourbon brand. You know, that's the next step,
right?
Just buy barrels.
You go to limited releases, and then you go to rum, and then you start your own bourbon brand. You can't get your own, you can't get all the limited releases.
You know, the other thing of Fred, you made a really good point. Like, because I was one of those people, I used to go and camp out for Van Winkle and BTAC and all that sort of stuff. And you created a sort of, well, I'd say almost an alliance of sorts with people that you are with. So you've got your hunting party, you know when it's going to go. And when you know something's going to drop and you're there, you drop your stuff, you're in your place in line. And then it becomes kind of a good party with some buddies for the next 18, 24 hours or whatever it ends up being. Now, I will say there are two annoying parts of this.
Spirits of French Lick exploded onto the distilling scene early in 2016 as Indiana's largest double pot still distillery. They employ old world sentiment with new world attitudes, delivering the finest handcrafted bottle and bond bourbons to an audience eager for an alternative to the big guys. And their distiller, Alan Bishop, uses historic Hoosier yeast strains, alternative grains, and 53-gallon, number 2 char barrels to bring you spirits with unparalleled quality and depth of flavor. You can find all Spirits of French Lick's products and new releases on sealbox.com. But don't just take Fred Minnick's word for it. Find out for yourself. Check out spiritsoffrenchlick.com and follow them on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And remember, always drink responsibly. Total Wine & More is ready for summer. They've got all your pours for the great outdoors, like their top 12 wines under $15. And raise a glass to America with a star-spangled selections of sips made in the USA. And beat the heat with refreshing bourbon cocktails. Why not mix it up and serve a brown derby or a peachy keen at your next barbecue? Then taste your way to a new flavorant, like ready-to-freeze cocktail pops and fun fizzy hard seltzers. Lime, pineapple, and peach, anyone? So no matter if you're grilling, chilling, or both, you're sure to find cool prices on over 8,000 wines, 4,000 spirits, and 2,500 beers in-store or totalwine.com. Heaven Hill Distillery just launched a 3D behind-the-scenes tour of their Bernheim Distillery, the largest independent family-owned bourbon distillery in the world. See for yourself how they produce 1,553-gallon barrels of new-make whiskey per day before it makes its way to the barrel for aging. From grain trucks to copper stills, drop into this 3D experience at heavenhilldistillery.com and navigate your way around the distillery for a step-by-step look at how they craft their award-winning lineup of American whiskeys. Heaven Hill reminds you, think wisely, drink wisely. Cheers.
Now, I will say there are two annoying parts of this. One is that when there are new people to this sort of hobby of, you know, camping out and doing whatever, there are people that like to live and die by the sword that say, if you leave your chair, you're out of line.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Like, no, nobody's going to sit in their chair for 24 hours. Like, right. Let them go to the bathroom, let them go get something to eat and then come back. Like, nobody's sitting there and like, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that is kind of like, golly. So there's some people that, you know, they really want to, you know, die on that hill and have that be their thing.
So what's the time threshold that someone can be away from their chair though?
I mean,
like you go set it up and say they're gone.
An hour and a half is probably fine.
Oh yeah. But say it's like 3 hours, 4 hours. You start let's kicking it out there.
And that's see, and that's where the alliance comes in. Because you'd be like, oh no, he was just here 10 minutes ago. You missed him? He just had to run
and take it. I haven't left an hour and a half. And I've seen that chair from 50 chairs back. I can see that one.
But well, that you brought up the serious guy. You know, you brought up the person that's there for whatever reason. Maybe they're wanting to get the bottle for something very special in their life, but they're so serious, they're not going to like have anything get in the way. And it's like, they're the person that if there's a fire and you happen to be just like an arm's reach of them and you're all running out the building at the same time, they're going to grab you and throw you back and like, yeah, you're going to burn now. I'm not, you know, so those people exist, you know, but those people also exist at sporting events when you're trying to get out of the stadium after the game is over. And I think sometimes in bourbon we tend to look at this industry as if it's unique. But the fact is assholes exist everywhere. And when we can kind of compare bourbon to other hobbies or enthusiast groups and you paint it with the same picture, it's like, you know what? We're not nearly as bad as leaving a Browns game or, you know, something like that. You know,
you're not going to find a more charitable giving, you know, on the most part. I mean, I'd say 95% of the people in this hobby are some of the greatest people you'll ever meet. And
95% of those people in that line would be like, man, is everything okay?
Right.
When they got back, you know, held your spot for you.
Just the 5% that ruins it.
Well, I mean, because you got the other 5% that go and drop a chair the day before and they're the first three chairs and they just dart. Right. And they're nowhere to be found. And so the next person comes up and they post it on the Facebook group. They're like, whose chairs are these? Crickets. And they're like, well, that's it. These chairs are gone.
Well, we always have someone taking advantage of the system. That's just how it is in everything.
Yeah.
And I think I really do believe that in this space, it's mostly good people.
Yeah. I think just the raffle is the best way to go. You know, it takes all like fuckery out of it. It's just like, you know, you don't have to have people working the system to gain points. You don't have people camping in line, you know, first come, first serve. It's just like random. And some people say it's not random because they're like, oh, it's fixed or, you know,
I mean, to be fair, like when I used to have time and I used to love camping out, I hated when they turned into raffles because I was like, I didn't mind wasting my time to sit in line and do this. Now it was also a different time when I had time to burn and go do all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was always guaranteed something if I was there in line and I had some fun. Granted, you know, your back hurts the next day because you slept in your car, but you at least came away with something you put in the time and effort to be able to go and do it. Now, the other side of this is, yes, that is, it sounds cool to be able to get that, but there are the other actors that are just there, either they're paid to be in line or anything like that, that ends up being the most annoying part of it too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, those who are paid, you know, again, going to something else.
And they're not even paid that much. They're like, how much they pay? And they're like, $50. I'm like, what? You're gonna spend all day here for $50?
Dude, when I was in college, what I would do for $50? You kidding me?
Oh, that's true. You went to college a long time ago, though.
Beers were a nickel.
Yeah.
I could get a Keystone.
You're still on type.
Light six pack for $2.
I'm just messing.
It's true, though.
All right. So we got the bourbon. We got the press release. Now we go to get it. Now people have got it. And they start either talking about it or tasting it or selling it, whatever, you know.
Well, I mean, there's the other
Hold
side.
Hold on, wait. Did Ryan just take he charge did. Of the episode and keep he it flowing?
Well, I mean,
but I felt bad calling
no,
you.
No, please do, because I mean, it is. It don't get me wrong, because it is annoying when you know you do spend a lot of that time, and people just go around and flip it, or you found somebody that just got it for retail, just being at the right place at the right time, and then they flip it, and you're like, God damn, dude, like. We busted our ass to try to get this bottle. I mean, I remember waiting at, it was really old, really cold in the morning. And I think this is when like E.H. Taylor Cured Oak came out. And I was like one of five people at Liquor Barn that day.
God, that's like his dream bottle, Cured Oak.
Oh, that's one of mine too.
Yeah. And I just remember, you know, getting that, you know, basically being there. And they were like, oh, it hasn't come in yet. But since you're the first five people here, what was the order people came in? And I'll call you when it comes in. And I was like, oh, I mean, it worked out in my favor that.
What if they're like, they did and they never called you?
Actually, I did get the call. So that was a good thing. But I mean, put in the effort to actually go and get it. And then, you know, you hear about something, another friend or another group, and you're like, oh, no, I just walked into, you know, this other store and they just had it on the shelf. And you're just like, damn it. And then they go and they sell it right away. And you're like, man, I just put all that time and effort to try and, you know, leave my wife and kid at 4 a.m. to go and stand in line in a parking lot, right? Like, that is annoying.
Yes.
Therein lies the one of the things you have to do too. You have to like not look at what the competition does, you know. And I know that that's not the easiest thing to do, but once you get the bottle, don't look around. Don't look like just when you buy a car. The worst thing you can do is to see what other people paid for the car. There's just you want to buy the bottle and you want to get home, drink it, end of story. Have a friend over, end of story. You know, don't look and see what other people have done or how they got it, because what that will do, that will take away the journey, you know? And the thing is, we always talk, there's a common discussion of, what's the saying? Is it the destination or is it the journey? To me, it's the journey. You know, I love all the work I have put into my career, and people see where I'm at and they're just like, oh, you just woke up and had all this.
They're on an ascot and came away. Yeah,
that's it. I mean, they're just like, I was like, they don't see the times that I was, you know, had to, you know, basically pray that a freelance check would come in so we could make, you know, mortgage payments. You know, that's the kind of thing. I love the work that goes into things. I love, to me, like, that's why I have like so much respect and admiration for like Tom Brady, is because he has that work ethic and everything. And that's
enjoy the process.
It's the process. And so the process of the hunt and getting the bottles, and it's very different for all of us now. But when we were, you know, back in the old days, you know, it was a hunt.
Yeah.
And that process for you, Kenny, that hurt back, sleeping in your car, you know,
four door
chiropractic lessons,
you know, yeah. I mean, there's just so many great memories that you have.
There is. And, you know, it brings back, and maybe we'll talk about this, but like when you do get that bottle and you're like so excited about it, but then you get on social media and people say, oh, this sucks, you know, or like, it's terrible. And you're like, shit.
Oh no.
You know, it's like one I can think of is, you know, like Parker's 24, you know, we spend all night at Bourbon Festival, you're partying, drinking, then you get up early, you're waiting, it was like 88 degrees, you're like sweating out demons, and then you get the bottle and you're like, yes, I'm so excited. Then you get, and people are like, well, I heard it sucks, and you're like, oh, and then you try and you're like, oh, it does suck. And I don't know, that's you know, but you're right, we had so much fun, you know, the night before. Yeah. Partying, hanging out in anticipation of, you know, getting the limited release. But that is annoying.
You know, the beautiful thing about, you know, bottles that, you know, obviously don't meet your palate for that particular time. Sometimes you approach them a little bit later and you like them a little bit more. Your palate changes, you change and all that. So if you got a 24-year-old, I mean, that one was not a good release. I remember scoring that very low, actually. But like, there have been bottles that, you know, I wasn't that hot on, and I approached him a year or two later. Oh, you know what? Pretty good. So, you know, even though the hunt may end with a loss, sometimes you rally back to it and
give it a couple of years, try it again.
You know what? You've changed or whatever, or maybe, you know, a little bit of a mysterious extra bourbon got in there while the cork was on there. Who knows? But
some magic for you.
Yeah. Things happen. So, but, and this is, and I think this is like being married to a shrink has helped me personally, is that she's like, you can't let, when you let those kind of like outside, like bad, like commentary into what you do and love, it will affect you. It will sour you. And before you know it, you're putting all your money into a bourbon brand and, right. You know,
you're in debt. You're just hoping for 4 years to come quick and people still want bourbon.
Yes.
So the other thing that we kind of also look at is with COVID, it really flipped a lot of, you know, a releases kind of upside down because you had to start turning to some things that went online. Do we kind of see as online? Is it here to stay? Is it annoying?
Well, given the amount that you have complained about it, I know. I mean,
all right, okay. Well, I'll go first. I'll get my gripes out.
I don't think anybody wants to hear a Kenny Coleman technology bashing like we saw.
He's gonna.
I mean, my God, can he pick it apart?
He's gonna smoke it. You know, it's like they don't stand a chance. No. It's like they had no idea what they were getting into.
No, they were like, oh, you mean this old 1995 AOL program won't work on this?
Fire up the bots. Here we go. So when we look at the online side, I understand it sounds good in theory, but there's some flaws unless you figure out how to make it work in your favor. And that's because there are bots. Those are real things when there is something that comes out. The other side of this is when you just don't announce anything and it just shows up randomly. Now, don't get me wrong. That is good for the people that are sitting there and constantly hitting refresh. I mean, I know I see it constantly here on the local groups, and they're like, oh, Michter's 10-year rye on Fort Nelson website, go now. I don't know how this word leaks out, or I don't know how it happens, but there are times when, you know, you're gonna be the last to know because you're not in this little special clique that finally, you know, either they have something scraping the website that says when something is actually in stock, because those Chrome extensions do exist. That's actually very easy to see. You just put it on there, and anytime there's and you refresh it every 5 seconds, if there's a change on the website, it sends you a text message to let you know what's going on. So there are ways around this, and so it's a very tough thing because I don't know if there's a difference of figuring out how to be better at the system versus the random luck is if you go into a liquor store and they just happen to have a bottle on the shelf because they're like, hey, today we're going to go put an allocated bottle on the shelf and whoever's lucky gets it.
Yeah, I mean, the bots and stuff's way over my head, but
yeah,
I think it's way over the heads of the distilleries, dude. They're just like, we're just trying to sell whiskey as fair as possible. But,
yeah, I think the distilleries have to be real careful about allowing technology into the process. I mean, what if someone with like a high level hacking ability comes in and just creates 300 different accounts and buys up everything? You know, or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs, and this is still a handshake, look in the eye industry that's still relatively the same as it was in the early 1900s. And I think there's a romance to that. And when we start talking about doing this online, it's just not to me. It doesn't feel right in a lot of ways. And let's not forget, we still are in the three-tier system. And this is an industry that's been fighting, you know, liquor shipping. Yet it's okay for us to like divvy out allocated bourbons online. I mean, there's just a lot of hypocrisy in the industry when it comes to this. And I think, you know, if you're going to have the three-tier system, have the three-tier system and let someone who has the capability to manage online fulfillment, not the distillery. You know, we saw so many bad examples. We've seen so many people upset. And I felt bad for Old Forester. I felt so bad for Old Forester when they had their
birthday bourbon
release. I mean, they were getting trashed. People trashing people that shouldn't be trashed. It was like, you know, it's not Campbell Brown's fault. It's not Jackie's fault. I mean, it was a situation. And cut people slack. And so, but people get very angry on, I think people get more angry on for online issues than they do for something in person. And maybe that's the keyboard warrior effect. I don't know, but it was, it's just, I have not seen the online distribution of this work out very well for the distillers.
Yeah. Go ahead. One thing that annoys me about the online is that they want to say, you know, you can order it online, but only you can pick it up, you know, and it's like, well, wait a minute, that's a total disadvantage to all the consumers that, you know, throughout the country that could have access to this through online, which is exactly probably the point of online. So it's like, why do it online if you can't send somebody locally to go pick it up for you, you know, another person? I don't quite understand that, because you can have a buddy, you know, go pick it up for you and then give it to your, but I know that was one annoying thing about an online release that was recent, is that you have friends that got, they're like, they were so thrilled, but then the distiller's like, well, no, you have to be here to pick it up. And you're like, well, I can't fly in for 8 hours to go get one bottle, yeah, you know? But anyway.
And this is kind of on topic, and I know you all get on the Buffalo Trace barrel pick thing. Is that a pretty, is that a good one?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know,
at first they had it figured out, but yeah, now there's competition.
Yeah, I tell you what, at first it wasn't too bad. I mean, we got a barrel for the past, I think, 2 to 3 years, every year, except for this year, because they did change the process a little bit. And don't get me wrong, the bad part about like the Old Forester release, the Buffalo Trace Bourbon Barrel release, is that they blast it out there and they let everybody in the world know about it. And so all of a sudden, everything's gone in 0.8 seconds, right? So you have this overcrowding of people that are just wanting to get it, and who knows if they even really want it. I don't really know. I mean, I remember for the Buffalo Trace Barrel program, looking at some of the local groups, and they're like, oh, I got like a 1792 foolproof. Like, do I have to pay for this? Like, I already got it. Like, I'm like, why were you even on there? If, like, you don't even know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So A, annoying point number one. B, I will say that this year, you know, hats off to the Buffalo Trace team. I think they actually did a very good job, because we used to try and, you know, rally around a bunch of people and everybody hit the site at once, like just check out with whatever you can get. And like, we'll just take whatever barrels we can get. Like, it worked out really great. So anyway, they changed it this year. And so no matter what, if you were there at like, I don't know, maybe 12 p.m., if anybody was there before 12, you just ended up with some random queue in line. So as soon as 12 hit, it said, you're now number 17,452 in line. But they only had like 24 barrels. So you had to be like the first 24 to actually get something. So it was more or less like an online raffle. And wow, I think it worked out relatively well, at least for the people that won.
So if you got on before 12, you were put in randomly. But what if you got there at 12? Were you still put in randomly?
If you got there after 12, then you got put in the back of the line. But if you were there beforehand, you just got put into this bucket. And once 12 hit, everybody in that bucket got some random number.
Sure. Gotcha. Okay.
So it was fair-ish, and I'll give it to him.
Yeah. All of these are fair-ish.
It's not fair because I didn't get one, right? Like, that's the annoying part. No, I'm just kidding. It's all good to them. But I think we got some good gripes out today, fellas.
Well, I think I feel
better.
I also feel like what we did here, without really intending to, is we had a good analyzation of the bourbon buying culture, you know, and it got me to, you know, to really thinking of like, you know, how can any of it be fixed? And I don't know if it ever can be.
No, because you're always going to have winners and losers. Just like there's no perfect system for any problem. You're always going to have winners and losers. And that's just,
I think we
don't want to accept that.
Most problems have it's within your grasp to possibly fix it. The only really thing that can happen is if the distillers, you know, churned out better product.
Or more
product. Remember those?
Mo better.
But really, let's also answer the question. How is, let's say, what's Rare Breed? We all like Rare Breed, right?
I think we can all concur.
We all like Rare Breed. An Old Forester 1920. We're not waiting in line for those bottles. We're getting them every day.
Yep.
How much better is the bottles that we are waiting in line for better than Rare Breed and Old Forester 1920.
Here's the thing, you'll never know until you get it. And so that keeps the hunt and the chase alive.
And that's why bourbon is the perfect product, because it's ever. They can always say, well, it's this special barrel or this side of the warehouse or that, this. It's never replicated.
It was exactly, kissed by the moon on the crescent night of
or it's this
All very, Hallows Eve.
Very, yeah. very small batch, you know, where it's not the small batch, but the very, very, you know, and it's the perfect product because there's so many factors that go into it mm-hmm. that you can just manipulate it one way or the other to make it special.
That's so true.
And that's the beauty of it, but probably the most annoying about it too. So,
well, good job, fellas. This is a way to kind of, as Fred said, analyze the bourbon buying habits.
Yep.
We got it. We got our therapy session in. So cheers, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit wherever you get your social media, as well as where I'll get your podcast. Make sure you follow Fred Minnick as well and check out his podcast too, The Fred Minnick Show. With that, cheers, everybody. And we'll see you all next week.
Vodka sucks.
Toodles.